Hello, I'm David Payne, careers editor at Nature, and this is Working Scientist, a Nature Careers podcast. In this seven-part series, Science Diversified, we're exploring how the scientific enterprise truly benefits when you have a team of researchers from a broad range of backgrounds, disciplines, and skill sets. In this sixth episode, we focus on race and ethnicity in science. We meet two black researchers to discuss the challenges, the value of mentoring, as well as the pros and cons of diversity initiatives.
I'm proud of my black skin. I'm proud of the struggles that we face and the things that I face now. But I also think of it sometimes as a burden because sometimes in certain defined spaces in academia, you're the only one. And that has its own set of challenges because there's so many eyes. You're like the rubric or the curriculum that everyone will go by in order to either acquire someone else or not. My name's Antonor Hinton. Most people call me AJ, and I am an assistant professor at Vanderbilt University in the Department of Molecular Physiology and Biophysics. And I study mitochondrial dynamics regulation during aging. And if I find the fountain of youth, I'll try to bottle it and put it in a pill so that everyone can have, a chance to live forever. I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, and I was always a curious child. I first learned about science through my grandparents. My grandparents would take me to garden, and my grandfather was an auto mechanic, and so he would always teach me how things went together in a car. So I got a lot of physics exposure, engineering exposure. At the time, I didn't know that's what it was called. And then I also got a lot of plant biology or botany exposure.
So my name is Professor Carla Faria. I work at University College London. I'm a full professor. My area of expertise is intense field laser-matter interaction. So I work with matter in intense fields, very, very, very short time scales. I was born in the Amazon Delta in Belém. I'm also ethnically of mixed heritage, so I'm what people in Brazil call a parda. So these are black people of Afro-European ancestry.
The 1,000 Black Scientists list is an opportunity to showcase the history that has occurred from black scientists over the years in science in general. So there could have been more names, but we chose 1,000 based upon a set of criteria and also a review panel that helped us to do this. We, meaning me, plus the community of scholars to do this 1,000 list. And it is a tribute for all the years of hard work where black scientists were not recognized for their efforts in science. And then also to demonstrate what the newer generation, the younger assistant professors and some just associate professors are now doing to change the face of science, whether it's in cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, you name it, engineering, and even mathematics. And another thing is that a lot of times, a lot of the older generation that paved the way to be able to allow for me to have a PhD were not recognized. An example of that would be Sandra Murray. She actually received her PhD in Iowa, I believe, in the 70s, when no person of color had ever received their PhD. And if it wasn't for her putting up with certain institutional challenges that had occurred throughout that time period, I wouldn't be able to have a postdoc at Iowa, nor be able to be mentored by an African-American male that is Dr. Edel Abel that actually runs the Department of Internal Medicine. So mentoring is applying your experiences to individuals. It's kind of like an echo. So if someone told me something that was useful and I relay it to someone else, the individual that now is the mentee or the trainee will be able to remember what I've said. But really what they are actually remembering is the echo that came from my own individual that trained me. And so that concept is important. And I think that's what we have to impart in trainees. Echoes that are of positive, emotional, moving towards a goal, very oriented task. Mentorship is a set of principles that align with who you are as an individual and you're learning how to work with another individual to create a relationship that prospers that person towards their goals, and it meets their aspirations. And sometimes it can be a cumbersome process. Not everything's easy if you want to obtain it. It should be something that's towards a process or a goal every time.
In fact, more than mentoring, I would say we need a restructuring in how the current system works. But because this is not going to happen overnight, individuals who come from disadvantaged backgrounds, they need to be able to navigate the present system. So be able to do this more easily with mentoring, because the system is already rigged in favor of, let's say, a white, middle-class, British person, or if you want to be even more precise, white, middle-class, British, male person. So these people, they have learned things by osmosis, if you want, from their family, from their peers, they have connections, they know what to say at the right time, they had access to education. Now pick up, for instance, a person who is black and is coming from a poor background or a working class background. This person doesn't know these things because they didn't learn this at home. So they need to have some help to be able to navigate this. Ideally, everybody should have access to good education, should have the same opportunities. But while this is not the case, people need a help to be able to compete in a level playing field, or at least in something that is not that unequal as it is right now. My case, I mean, I'm a privileged person because I learned a lot of these things first by osmosis, because I come from a rich and privileged background. So if you wish, I had a lot of informal mentors. I have great allies. I have people who have helped me navigate through things. I have support from my family. I have support from my friends. I have a great partner. And the only reason why I had to blaze my own trail is because I decided to leave home. Once I left, say, the north of Brazil, I had to deal with racism as well, many times with sexism. But in a way, I always had very helpful allies and people who really helped me along the way.
And I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't realize with mentorship. It has to be intentional and it has to be discovery based. And what I mean by that is that you're sitting down using an individual development plan, a mentoring compact. These are tools that can be used to develop a mentor. So individual development plan allows you to mark down your strengths, your weaknesses, your future goals, and then what honors and awards you're going to do. And then areas that are outside of the sciences that you need help, you know, improving. And the mentoring compact, just for everyone to know, is a set of criteria that a mentor guides themselves by and that will guide you by while you're in their presence as a mentor. And it's a contractual agreement that, you know, that you'll agree to do these things that, you know, they're asking you to do. Oh my gosh, I feel like I do so much mentoring. The individuals that I've actually mentored myself are around 49 or 48. I can't remember. It's getting close to 50. My goal is to get them to where they become better than me at that stage that they're at. The mentoring style that I have is consistency, a lot of hard work, and helping them reach their goals a lot sooner than what they think that they can achieve, and believing in them when they've lose hope in themselves, because times can be challenging when you're coming up against so many oppositions, whether it's your grades, whether it's family, personal relationships, you know, or just having your own, you know, mental health challenges when you're going through school because you've never balanced this load before.
The status quo is never going to change without pressure from below. And also you have to find ways of getting in the system to be able to try to influence things from the inside. And committees, if effective, would be a way to do this. Some committees can be effective, some cannot be. There are other ways. For instance, there are pressure groups, there are people who demonstrate, there are many, many other ways. So you cannot dismiss the committees, but you need to ensure that they are effective. It's going to depend on whether you are given some power because the committee is within an institution, a university, and sometimes there's a framework within you have to operate, and this is limited. At the moment, I'm not involved in any diversity committee because I need to focus on my research and I need to get my priorities right. However, I am involved in several initiatives. For instance, I am a mentor in a Be Mentor scheme at UCL, which is a scheme focused on Black and minority ethnic groups. So I'm involved, but not in a committee in which I have to meet regularly, and that is going to take a lot of my time. I have been in the past, but I feel I need to prioritize things.
Basically, I keep myself busy, but not too busy. I always remember the power of saying no. And how I do that is I focus on my mentoring evaluations with Dale. So we meet one time a month to talk about diversity, to make sure I'm on target to do the things I need to do with my diversity role. And then we stay focused on the research on a day-to-day basis with Hanada Pereira in the lab. She helps me to do a lot of those activities. And then for the bigger task of how to say no, Dale works with me very closely about the opportunities that I may have for a month. Sometimes I have maybe 60, 70 opportunities come. I know it sounds a little insane, but then we choose to do maybe 4 or 5. But it's a balancing act. And there are times when I also say no for a whole month. So basically, you know, in December, I said no to everything.
I have to balance power and time. It's not worth getting involved in a committee where you're going to spend a lot of time and you're not going to have power to change things, because you are going to spend precious time, which is time you would be investing in your research. And if you are discussing things that are going to have little effect, and if you're not going to be able to make pressure, you have a lot to lose, basically. Another thing I would call your attention to is that physics in particular and STEM subjects in general, they are very competitive and they require immersion from you. So if you are doing diversity work, you're going to be asked to do the same thing over and over and over again. Sometimes you are going to talk to deaf ears, and what is going to happen is that your white male counterparts are going to publish another paper while you are spending your time doing this. So you already have the issue that the system as it is built doesn't favor you. And on top of that, you have a taxation which is associated with this committee work. So you really have to ensure that the time and the effort that you're putting there is effective. Because otherwise, you're going to be sacrificing your whole scientific career at the altar of diversity, and you don't even know if something is going to happen. But on the other hand, you would like something to change because you have been at the receiving end. So you would like to change culture, you would like to change society, but you cannot become a martyr. And sometimes it's better to wait. For instance, I supervise a lot of PhD students who are involved in this, or I have supervised, and I told them, wait a little bit, build your reputation as a scientist, and if you are an established scientist and you say something, whatever you say is going to have more weight.
I believe that being a Black scientist can be challenging, and I recognize myself as a Black scientist, but I also think of it as sometimes a burden. And so I'll start with the high note first. And the reason that I want to start with the high note is because I, you know, am very proud of my Black skin, and I never want to change who I am because I know where I come from. I know my family history. I'm proud of coming from individuals that made livings that may not have known how to read and write, like my grandfather, but were able to produce a PhD down the line, you know. So I'm proud of my Black skin. I'm proud of the struggles that we face and the things that I face now. But I also think of it sometimes as a burden, because sometimes in certain defined spaces in academia, you're the only one. And that has its own set of challenges because there's so many eyes. You're like the rubric or the curriculum that everyone will go by in order to either acquire someone else or not. And so sometimes it may be a burden, but I take on that leadership responsibility so that there are other individuals that will be at the table like me to help make decisions for individuals that don't have an opportunity. I like to use my voice as a way to effectively communicate why scientists of color and especially Black scientists should have an opportunity to excel and to be given the opportunity to critically think and evaluate problems from a different angle. And I think it's the most beautiful thing when you have scientists of all colors and all ideas working together for a common cause, because the idea here is to rescue or alleviate or treat or even cure a disease. That is the main object of why we're in academia. It shouldn't be based upon race politics or, you know, anything related to religious, morals. I mean, I think everyone is entitled to everyone's beliefs, but I think it's just around asking the question, what does it take to answer the question? But we do have to have a sense of morality where we remember that everyone's different, and those experiences actually can allow for you to critically think from a different angle and allows for maybe more accelerated science to occur. I mean, look at Kasmika Corbett. You know, she's helped to develop a vaccine that we're all taking now, and I think that's a beautiful thing when you have diversity at the table. It's very powerful.